August 11th, Stuttgart, Serenity, Prabhupada's appearance day.
This club looked like an ice cream cone, and the waves in the ocean looked like psychedelic question marks. So when I finished the painting and presented it to Srila Prabhupada, naturally, as usual, as we mentioned this morning, all the devotees always surround Prabhupada wherever he was. Well, however many was there, it could have been 200, but this time it was about 20 who happened to be in his apartment in Temple area. And the last time when I mentioned it, when he visited ISKCON Press in Boston, then it was 200. So however many are in the vicinity, that's how many, like a magnet. So Prabhupada looked at this horrible painting, and he could have said a million bad things about it. Like, you think I'm going to use that in my temple? But instead, he said, now who could look at that and say that is not God? So I was so encouraged that I thought, yes, I don't know how I can ever do such a good painting as this again, but I will surely try for this amazing personality who loves me so much. So this is an example of how in the beginning he was so encouraging. And then a couple of years later, he was telling the devotees, I was there, he said in the beginning she could not paint, but I encouraged her, so now she has become expert. And then later he said the same thing about that time, to show how he was actually being encouraging. And then in 1977, there was a painting that I had done on his wall. He was in the Krishna Balaram Mandir. He had his quarters there. So there was a painting that I had done back in the early 70s, and it was on his wall there in 76. And Prabhupada made an announcement. There was about 150 people in the room. He said, in the beginning, she could not paint, but by Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, the talent is coming out. And now she is painting with her soul. So I definitely wasn't, but just to show his encouragement. When Prabhupada came to Boston in 1968, I had all the paintings that he had told me to do surrounding all the walls. There was one of Radha and Krishna and the Eight Gopis, which is about 5 feet long, a couple of pictures of Prabhupada himself, like one that he had given me a photo, which was a passport photo. So they took a picture with one of those flash cameras, which make everything look very stark, and the shadows are just like black lines around the person. And you know how Prabhupada is like that sometimes, when he's posing, when he's in a photo? So I said, when he gave me the picture, I said, you look so sad there, Swamiji. So he said, no, that was a moment of ecstasy. So I painted that picture and a few others. Another Vishnu in the causal ocean and Panchatattva, a few others. So when Prabhupada sat down on the Vyasasana to give the lecture, he began by saying, first of all, we have to thank Jadurani, because she has given us life in Krishna consciousness by these paintings. So actually, it was him, the one that was giving us life. But just to show how Prabhupada is just like a father, and we were all like his little newborn, like his little Sundaris. You know Sundari, the little baby of Rasheshwari. And so he's being very, very encouraging. And I don't know if I mentioned this while I was here, but there was one time, I think I did mention it, where he was trying to prove that Krishna is so unlimited and so complete that even though so many complete units emanate from him, like this phenomenal world, still he remains the complete balance. And although he's creating billions of universes, he doesn't get any less. Rather, he gets his, the nature of him is that he gets increasingly greater. So then he said, just like the sun has been giving out innumerable degrees of heat and light since the beginning of time, and maintaining, or the beginning of this creation, and maintaining all the planets and everything on it, but the sun hasn't become cooled down. He said, just like our Jadarani, she's painted so many pictures, but she hasn't gotten less. So he always made us feel good. Sometimes he made us feel like dying, like I said earlier today. So he was simultaneously hard as a thunderbolt and soft as a rose. One of the first paintings he asked me to do was of his Guru Maharaj, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakura. And when I brought that painting to him, however big the decrease was from the original beautiful photograph that he had given me, still when I presented the painting to him, Prabhupada said, "You have brought me Vaikuntha," which was, you know, exactly the opposite. He was bringing us Vaikuntha. And once in Boston, I came late because I just had a big fight with my husband and I was all furious and everything. So I came late to the temple and Prabhupada was sitting in the back of the temple. Let's say Prabhupada's here and then the door is there. So there was like 200 people in the temple and I came in from the back door late when Prabhupada was already saying the Jayadwani prayers and the devotees were just starting to get up. So again, he could have said anything to me because we knew that he knows everything just by the energy that he gave out. But instead, speaking over all those 200 people who were just getting up, he called out to me and he said, there was a painting, this is his Vyasasana. So right here on the wall, there was a painting that I did of Sita Ram, Hanuman, and Lakshman. And I didn't really make it up, like from any description in his book, but I just copied it from a Indian print. And the only thing that I did change in my own was I made him green instead of the way they had it, which was blue, because Prabhupada said he was green. So Prabhupada called out to me and he said, "Did you do this painting?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You are already in Vaikuntha." And one time when he came in 1967 to Boston, his first time in Boston, well, actually, even before he was in Boston, when he was in New York, there was just about six or seven of us in his room. And I was feeling, you know, like the typical lusty brahmacharini. And Prabhupada made a big announcement, speaking to me, but so that everybody could hear. "Your face is beautiful, your mind is beautiful. Everything about you is beautiful." Talk about encouragement.
And what did you answer?
And another time, then some months later, we were in Boston and I was the same way. And then there was about 100 people in his darshan room. Again, I came late. And Prabhupada made this big announcement: "Jadarani does not like any other boy but Krishna." And he would always, very often, make us feel very important to his mission. Like we had a bunch of girls, young girls, who were also aspiring artists, just like I was. And Prabhupada would write me letters like I was some big shot or something. and say, so I want you to get all the girls together in one place, and either in San Francisco or Boston or New York, as you like, and flood the world with these pictures. And then he wrote to other devotees like Satsvarup or Brahmananda, I'm always concerned about Jadarani's assistant artists because they're doing very important work for our mission. So these are some of the ways that Prabhupada was very encouraging. I'll tell you another way, another one though that was in line with my experiences of this morning. I did a painting of Narada Muni that he, right in front of me, he had this Hindi book with a picture of Narada Muni in it, in a forest, playing his clappers with one hand and his finger with the other hand. And so he ripped it out of the book and he gave me the picture and he told me to make a big painting out of it, which I did. And Prabhupada hung it in the temple at 61 Second Avenue. That was his second larger temple than the 26 Second Avenue. The 26 Second Avenue temple was actually maybe the same size as this temple room plus the kitchen. And then if you go upstairs, that's Prabhupada's quarters. But 61 Second Avenue was bigger. So he hung the Narada Muni painting there, and I moved to Boston, and there I did my second Narada Muni painting. But I thought the first one wasn't good enough. So without asking Prabhupada if I could change the style, I thought, I want to make Narada Muni just like the Mona Lisa. I mean, as popular as the Mona Lisa, where people would throng for blocks and blocks. Because when I was living in New York then, they actually had Mona Lisa there. And for three long city blocks, people were lined up to get a 1 minute view. So I thought, yeah, I want to make Narada Muni just like that. So instead of putting him in the beautiful Vrindavan forest that Prabhupada gave me, a beautiful celestial forest, I tried to find something very realistic. So I went to the Boston Library, to the art department, and found this American redwood forest. You know what a redwood forest is? Redwoods are very, very fat, boring looking trees. Very, very high. Couldn't pick any fruits from them. And then I thought that in order to make it more like the Mona Lisa style, I'll copy some of the paintings that Rembrandt and Raphael painted their people. So I made Narada Muni with muscles and gaunt cheeks. And to top it off, I put a Jesus Christ style dhoti on it. You know how they have, like it comes down like that? It's in that kind of shape. And then I sent that to the San Francisco temple. And the devotees were writing me how now their kirtan was so ecstatic, they were jumping up to the ceiling. And then Prabhupada went to San Francisco, and he wrote me a letter that I liked your first Narada Muni painting because he looked like a first-class brahmachari, but this new one that you made, he looks like a meat eater. He has meat eater beauty. He said, and the first one that you did had milk drinker beauty. And so he told Govindadasi to give me a little Brijbasi print, probably you've seen it, of like 5-year-old Krishna sitting like this. And he's listening to blind Suradas playing his veena and singing songs of glorification. Very nice, sweet Indian print. And he said, here is the milk drinker conception of beauty. So then I wrote, I felt like dying, so then I wrote him a 3-line letter apologizing. So then he wrote back a long letter and he said, this is the first time I've ever gotten a letter from you in only 3 lines. The thing is that we're not meant to satisfy the senses of the materialistic people. We're meant to satisfy the senses of our acharyas. I don't mind if the paintings don't sell. give them to the temples for nothing if nobody will buy them. Actually, at that time, we were selling the paintings to the temples for $25. So then he said there's a story that one man was on a pilgrimage, and he was alone walking, had to pass different forests. So he got very hungry. So he was a Brahmana, and a Brahmana is only supposed to eat at a respectable Hindu's house. But he was so hungry that he ate at a non-Hindu's house, begged alms there. And even though he ate, the man gave him whatever he could, still he was hungry, wasn't enough. So then when he left the house and continued on his way, he lamented, "I lost my caste," because you lose your Brahminical caste if you disobey that law. "I lost my caste, and still I'm hungry." So I lost out both ways. So Prabhupada said, "To my point is, if you try to please the senses of the materialists and don't follow the principles of Guru Parampara and how to do the painting, then you'll lose out on your Krishna consciousness and you won't be popular like you wanted to be anyway." Then I saw Prabhupada in New York. We were both in New York after that. And he called me to his room, and then he continued his letter. And he said, "A person, generally people don't care how good a painting is. They think, oh, so-and-so did it, like, oh, it's a Picasso or a Rembrandt. Oh, then it's very good." So then I said, "Well, we do that too. We say, oh, Swamiji said that? Oh, then it's very good." So Prabhupada said, "Oh, I'm an old fool." He's just like so humble. And he said, "A topmost devotee will think, everyone is serving Krishna, even the ant. Simply I cannot engage." So Prabhupada was just like that. And I was always complaining either to myself or somebody that I had these backaches. So Prabhupada was very merciful and he said, "Okay, then come with me every day on my morning walk." So there wasn't a big group of devotees then. There was just Gorsundar, who used to go with him every day, who was his personal servant and also one of his artists. And then I got to go with him. And Prabhupada told so many wonderful things. Perhaps you've seen the movie. Me and Gorsundar are walking with Prabhupada. So one day I went to see Prabhupada to complain, like what to do. So he said, "Oh, I have this ache." It was just like me and him and maybe one other person in the room. "Oh, I have this ache, that ache. But before we leave this body, we have to become fully Krishna conscious. So pray to Krishna that, oh Krishna, please engage myself and my husband, always in your service, and not be lying in that bed." And he made this really disgusted face to show that he knows everything. Speaking of knowing everything, now we're going to the second part of the first part, now that Gokul Chandraprabhu is here. So it was clear to us on so many, if not all occasions, that he was a knower of everything just by the vibrations that he gave out. The very first time that I ever saw him was in Tompkins Square Park when he was sitting on this big red Indian rug. Red means the predominant color was red, but it was an Indian pattern. And he was playing this little dim dim drum. It was before Gurudev had sent the mridangas to him. And his devotees were dancing around in front of him. And I thought, he looks like a genie who just flew in on a magic carpet. So it was the presence that he emanated, even more than the things that he said. Although everything that he said, with the depth, you've heard his deep voice. Did you find the movies?
Yeah, it's already ready.
It's already ready to show, you mean?
Well,
I have to send it.
Well, Nyla Prabhu has the screen.
Yeah, it takes just 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
It takes me 20 minutes to set up the projector.
And Vasanti is right now going to set up the projector. Projecting machine. And then there were so many little things that he did that showed it. Like one time, Prabhupada had this big kirtan. We had this stage in the park, in Tompkins Square Park, and there were thousands of people there. And then Prabhupada, me, and my Rama went back to the temple early. So as we three were walking, I was holding the harmonium. And the moment I thought, oh God, this harmonium is so heavy, instantly Prabhupada said to Rai Rama, take the harmonium. And I always prided myself that I was, yes, I do so much service. So one time Prabhupada was leaving Boston and going to Montreal. So everyone was running around getting his luggage, packing up things, cleaning up the room, and Shri Radhishyam Sundar Ki Jai. Shri Gornitai Ki Jai. Shri Giriraj Govardhan Ki Jai. Shri Rashmini Srinivasan Bhagwan Ki Jai. So I didn't quite know what to do to help. So I was just kind of spacing out. And just as I was spacing out, Srila Prabhupada came into the room. And everybody was doing something, and I was just standing and not knowing what to do. And he looked at me to show me that if you're able to do anything, just by a look, we knew he was generating, that if you're able to do anything, it's just by my mercy. Otherwise, you're nothing. Just like I asked Gurudev once in Badger after his class, because he was talking about the Brahma Bimohan Leela, that Brahma thought that he was stealing the cows, but really Krishna was making him do that. So I asked Gurudev, so Brahma thought that he was doing something, but it was really Yoga Maya. So if we're doing something, not in sense gratification, but in your service, and we think we did some service, who really did it? Like if I think, oh, I just distributed a book, not in a very proud way, but just in a matter-of-fact way. Oh, I just distributed a book. Who actually distributed the book? So Prabhupada said, Gurudev did it. You cannot do anything. You cannot create a dry straw. And once we were coming up the aisle with Prabhupada after he got off the stage, he was giving an engagement in a university. So I was running to be right in front, so I could be in front of all the other devotees, so I could be right behind Prabhupada. But then, by what he was emanating, I understood, even though I'm standing like 5 inches behind him, I'm billions and billions of miles away, billions and light years away from him at the same time. And once he came to New York, and he was in the room of his quarters, very, very big room, and nobody was there except me. I walked in, and I gave him the rose, and I was thinking, one minute I was thinking, I'm the only person in the whole world who's with Prabhupada right now. And then he immediately generated from his prema atoms, and I understood, no, he's with everyone right now, and I'm just one of the everyone. And he's not thinking that he's any more with me than he is with everyone else who's his devotee and who's praying to him or thinking of him or serving him. I guess that's enough of the pastimes. Any questions or comments? And just one other encouraging thing that wasn't from his, not encouraging words, but I used to paint in his quarters, and there was this big barrel of sweet balls, glubjanas. And sometimes he would just take a spoon and feed me glajunas as I was painting. Yes, Anjum.
I would like to ask you, because you make such a great experience in my the class, like Prabhupada, Bhikacharya, for the very first time in your life, this life. So you have no experience before with Acharya, so it was the first meeting. And then you also recognize who is this person, and then it was time without such sadhu sangha. And I, maybe it's not good questions for today, but I, on my mind, I ask me how it must be to meet again somebody like this, like Chanaran Maharaj. So if you recognize some similar, that you know, yes, this is the goal, because I also have heard, I cannot really understand it, but we have heard the guru is the principle, is not really a person, so you met something like Prabhupada again.
He is a person, but he's not the body.
Yeah, so you met somebody like Prabhupada again, it is something like that you say, yes, it's the same thing or something similar in this, or what is the, what you feel, or what is the experience about met such a person, not it again.
Well, I had been praying to Srila Prabhupada for about a year before I met Srila Gurudev, and I was praying and crying to him for a year on two counts. One, I feel that there's some wall between us and I really want to connect with you. That's one. And also, I was getting to understand that all the lectures that I was giving around the world was just like babbling out syllables, that I had no understanding of what I was saying. Just like combinations of syllables that sounded like it resembled Harikata. So I was going to these bogus Mayavadi ladies programs, like Amaji and Muktananda's successor lady, and the hugging one.
That's Amma.
Amma. Just to see what a lady preacher does, because I only had examples of my godbrothers, and how they project themselves in an audience. Because I wanted to have more feeling in what I was saying, but it wasn't getting anywhere, obviously. So I was just praying and crying to Prabhupada for a year. And then I went to Vrindavan because the last instruction Prabhupada had given me was to do picture books of all of his books, like picture caption. So somebody suggested that I go to Vrindavan, and so I wanted to take pictures there. So I went there basically to take pictures for the picture books, like the backgrounds, temples and things. So then my god sister there in Vrindavan said, you want to meet a Mahapurush? And even though I had read Prabhupada's books for 26 years by that time, I didn't quite know what a Mahapurush was. So I said, all right, sure. And then she took me to see Srila Gurudev, and it took some minutes to get, like, it took a couple of meetings. But by the second meeting, when I asked him, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for 26 years, but I have no taste. And I also have been lecturing all over the world, but I don't know what I'm talking about. I have intellectual understanding, but no realized understanding. So regarding the chanting, he said, because I had already asked my godbrothers the same problem that I have, and they would quote from scriptures about the glories of the holy name, which was great, but it didn't do anything. So then when I said it to Gurudev, because it was really starting to bother me deeply that I have no taste for the chanting. So Gurudev sat up straight, and he said, you have to associate with someone who has taste. And then a light bulb went off in my head that, oh, yeah, that's what Prabhupada's been talking about. Krishna consciousness comes from association. Are you that person I was thinking? Are you that person, Tiburde, who has the taste that I'm supposed to be associating with? And then when I told him that I just have intellectual understanding.
But excuse me, what did he say? You ask him, can I have associated with?
No,
are you,
no, I was just thinking, are you that person who has the taste for the holy name that I'm supposed to associate with?
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked him, so I have intellectual understanding but no experiential understanding. And I thought he was going to say, intellectual understanding is not everything, which I already knew. But instead he said, intellectual understanding is no understanding. And that if you're hearing about Krishna and Radha walking in the forest, then you'll think, oh, I understand what that's like. I used to have a girlfriend or a boyfriend. We used to walk in the park together. I know what that's like, which is nothing like what it's like. So he, by that particular meeting, which was about my second or third meeting, he impregnated in me that I'm nowhere and I have to start all over again and get it right this time. So then gradually I became... realized who he was, that he's another Prabhupada. And then I asked him, you know, every time I ask you a question, I feel like Prabhupada's giving me the answer through you. Is it all right to think like that? And he said, if you have got that faith. And then he also showed, just like Prabhupada, by his, just what he emanated from his body, that he knows everything, past, present, and future. He knows what we're thinking. He could answer a question before we answer it, if it's on our mind. And his words have power to work on us and change us emotionally. So yeah, it was a double of Prabhupada. But with already having read all the things, Prabhupada's books for 26 years. So it was a new level of the same thing.
But, if you had no taste for 26, 27 years, what made you going on?
Well, philosophically, I knew it was the right thing.
Uh-huh.
And there is taste in certain things. Like I loved preaching and book distribution. I love giving class, speaking, hearing. I loved doing the services. I loved hearing Prabhupada's tapes. I didn't hate chanting, but there was no relish.
There was no relish. How many years were you starting?
It was 26 years after I met Prabhupada that I met Gurudev.
Okay, but how many years we need to take taste? Or
it could take a minute and it could take a million years, depending on our past life, our association, our sincerity, our longing.
When you had no taste, how many hours did you chant? Like how many hours?
16.
You would chant?
Yeah, religiously.
Wow.
And then I learned from Gurudev that 16 is nothing. Yeah, so then from Gurudev, every time he said anything, these light bulbs would go off in my head. Oh, right, that's what Prabhupada meant about that. And he was just like, as he said he was doing, we felt he was doing. That I'm giving you this shovel to dig deeply into Prabhupada's books. I'm putting the spotlight on Prabhupada's books so that you can see what he's really saying. And it was just like everything he said was overwhelming, Gurudev. Just like everything Prabhupada said was overwhelming, everything Gurudev said on the platform of Prabhupada was overwhelming. Like he himself gave the example, because I didn't know that Krishna came back to Vrindavan after he killed Dantavakra, and Gurudev said it, and all these years. I said, well, how come I'm just finding that out now? So Gurudev went like this, and he said, what's in my hands? Do you know what's in my hands, Manju?
Nothing.
Oh. Well, okay, if you didn't know there was nothing, and I did that, then there would be some curiosity, wouldn't there?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went like that, you'd go, oh! But if I just showed you the same thing, it wouldn't be so exciting. So things are kept from us intentionally, thank you, intentionally by Krishna and his manifestations until the right time comes to learn it.
Ich
don't you realize this? I didn't understand anything.
That is, if we learn too many things before it's the right time, we won't appreciate it. So when we're meant to learn something, just like it creates a curiosity. If you don't know something after a long time, and then you hear it, when you've already known so much else, and then you hear that thing, you appreciate it more than if you got that thing right away.
But what is the connection to this gesture with the hands?
I think it's more interesting if you get it when you're destined to get it than if you get it too early. If you get what's in my hands too early,
mm-hmm.
but if I've created an interest by doing that. So when I do that, you're interested.
Okay.
So before I tell you some secret, I create an interest by telling you years of something else to create a platform so you appreciate that.
Okay.
Like until you know how great Krishna is, there's no use to know how great Radharani is. Because like, If I say, oh, Manju's husband is ugly, toothless, lame, poor, and nasty, and he's with her, it doesn't say much about her. But if I say who Raghunath Prabhu really is, how qualified, beautiful, humble, hardworking, merciful, and all his good qualities, and he picked her, it shows something good about her. So we needed to hear about Krishna and be established in that before we can hear about Radha. Okay, the movie.